morning. This is a vision that Isaiah, son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's house will be the highest of all, the most important place on earth. It will be raised above the other hills, and people from all over the world will stream there to worship. People from many nations will come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of Jacob's God. There he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths." For the Lord's teaching will go out from Zion, his word will go out from Jerusalem. The Lord will mediate between nations and settle international disputes. They will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will no longer fight against nation nor train for war anymore. Come, descendants of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord, for the Lord has rejected his people, the descendants of Jacob. I did read that right. That is what that said. Sorry. For the Lord has rejected his people, the descendants of Jacob, because they have filled their land with practices from the east and with sorcerers as the Philistines do. They have made alliances with pagans. Israel is full of silver and gold. There is no end to its treasures. Their land is full of war horses. There is no end to its chariots. Their land is full of idols. The people worship things they have made with their own hands. So now they will be humbled, and all will be brought low. Do not forgive them. Crawl into caves in the rocks. Hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. Human pride will be brought down, and the human arrogance will be humbled. Only the Lord will be exalted on the day of judgment. For the Lord of heaven's armies has a day of reckoning. He will punish the proud and mighty and bring down everything that is exalted. He will cut down tall cedars of Lebanon and all the mighty oaks of Bashan. He will level all the high mountains and all the lofty hills. He will break down every high tower and every fortified wall. He will destroy all great trading ships and every magnificent vessel. Human pride will be humbled and human arrogance will be brought down. Only the Lord will be exalted on that day of judgment. Idols will completely disappear. When the Lord rises to shake the earth, his enemies will crawl into holes in the ground. They will hide in caves in the rocks from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. On that day of judgment, they will abandon the gold and silver idols they made for themselves to worship. They will leave their gods to the rodents and bats, while they crawl away into caverns and hide among the jagged rocks and the cliffs. They will try to escape the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty as he rises to shake the earth. Don't put your trust in mere humans. They are as frail as breath. What good are they?
Crawl in caves in the rocks, hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. These are not like the most like warm and pleasant sorts of phrases or words that God is using. This stuff is meant to be very terrifying and intense. So as you probably understand by now, the first few chapters of Isaiah are a little bit less of a narrative story and more of just this almost violent message that God is giving Isaiah to share to the people of Jerusalem. It's a long, drawn-out rant against the nation of Israel. And buckle up, because this is going to be occurring for like the next couple weeks that we're preaching on. So we're going to get like three more chapters of rant before we actually get into sort of Isaiah narrative.
Okay, So let's actually get started for once. So the introduction to this whole thing, if we go back to the first slide, this out is a vision that Isaiah receives at the start of his ministry. This message is to the people of Israel, and the long story short is that they aren't actually really doing well. They have a bit of a pride problem with God. And so, kind of made me think, this whole message has a little bit to do with pride, and how we examine pride, and how any sort of wealth and stature and anything we accumulate is kind of meaningless to the will of God. None of those things, we're not going to impress God with our cool toys or whatever we have that we've achieved or built or anything like that. Everything that we do that's going to actually matter to God is the stuff that we do that is for God. So I'll start off with a story about pride. And I am a very prideful person, and so I have lots that I can reference on. And I was trying to think of, like, examples of stories of pride that I could share with you guys, and I had a really hard time narrowing it down. So I'm going to go back to when I was very little, and I played with Legos. I love Legos to this day. I know I'm a grown man, but they're the coolest thing. And for me, I was really, really tied into building, like, cool ships and castles and stuff like that, and doing all this fun stuff with Legos, and having my friends over and playing Legos with them. But I was, for one, very protective of certain Lego pieces that only I could really use. I let David, when he came over, have quite a few pieces, and then I let Chris have like 5 Lego pieces because he didn't really deserve to play with Legos with us. But I was very intentional about it. I was like, you guys get these Legos, but I want some of these best Legos because I'm the best Lego builder. And I still stand by that statement. I was a very good builder when I was little. I was super proud of what I made. I was excellent. And so I was like, that story probably has a little bit to do with, like, pride and my own thing, and I haven't really let go of it yet. So we'll gloss over that. But kind of, I think it's something that we all struggle with to various extents, and this is definitely something that was a problem with the nation of Israel at that time, is they've been a little bit less than humble with their resources and earnings that they've had, and they aren't really attributing any of it to God. Now, they've all been about their idol worship and their praise for themselves and their egotistical attitudes. So Isaiah's message, as we see at the very beginning here, isn't all bad. It actually starts off with a kind of interesting promise, I would say, and there's a lot of good that comes out of it. So before we get into some proper Israel bashing, we can take a look at this. This is a promise to Israel explaining that they will prosper under God's direct rule, that the people will come clamoring from all nations to be with him, and he will be the perfect judge and the perfect king, greater than anybody on earth could ever aspire to rule to. And this is something that kind of makes sense, is Israel, for a long time in history, was always like, we want a really great king, we want to have this perfect leader and stuff like that, and, you know, other nations have kings, and we can have kings, and that'll be great, right? And God is like, are you sure you want a king? And they're like, yeah. And then they got Saul, they got David, and then they got Solomon, and then it really went downhill. And so, we're kind of in this span of time where they aren't really realizing, oh, kings of this earth are not going to work for us. And so, this is a message that occurs and reoccurs throughout these chapters of Isaiah. God has a glorious plan for them, and that they will eventually get their perfect rule under him, under God, not just a king of this earth. You're not going to get this shiny, perfect person who's going to walk up and say, I'm the new king of Israel, and I am absolutely incredible in every way. No, you're not going to find a human that's going to do that right. And that's kind of what Isaiah has to share. And it's going to a very, very tough crowd, too. Right now, Jerusalem is a wretched hive of scum and villainy, and they need to listen to the words of the prophets that are approaching them and speaking out to them to actually redeem themselves in the eyes of God. And will they do it and repent? No. Of course not. Not right now. The city is filled with arrogance, vanity, and comfort in its life without God. After all, they have this big, wonderful city that they've built up themselves, all these incredible things that they've accomplished, that they did, and that they made. So, are they going to attribute any of that to God either? No. It's because the great kings that were around that time, Uzziah and Jotham, are the two that would be most likely for this era, were very prosperous. They were in charge of the nation. And Jerusalem, under the leadership of these people, actually had pretty significant amounts of wealth. If we move to the next slide, we have, for the Lord has rejected his people, the descendants of Jacob, because they have filled their land with practices from the east and with sorcerers, as the Philistines do. They have made alliances with pagans. This is kind of in reference to some of the alliances that those kings at that time have made with less savory people that don't necessarily believe in God, but it's really working out for them because they're becoming super wealthy. And then on the next slide, we have Israel is full of silver and gold. There is no end to its treasures. Their land is full of war horses. There's no end to its chariots. They're doing super great. Like, all these trade deals that they're doing with other nations that God is not necessarily super pleased with, working out fine for these kings. They admittedly, historically, weren't super supportive of idol worship, which is an interesting thing. Their land is full of idols. The people worship things that they've made with their own hands. I tend to think of this a little bit less as they're actually worshiping idols, because if indeed the two most prosperous kings of this time lining up with history are Jotham and Uzziah, they were still kind of like publicly against idol worship, and it was banned throughout Jerusalem. People were still probably doing that in their homes in secret, and they weren't putting in all the effort to go tracking them down. But what I think the real issue was is this ridiculous level of pride that they were almost idolizing themselves with. Of, this is what we've built ourselves up to become, this is what we are now. And so, in fact, in Chronicles, if I remember right, both of those kings were the people that, in those long lists of texts, were like, they did right in the eyes of the Lord, or like, followed the Lord's heart, or things like that. Which is weird for this message that Isaiah has to share with them, but it's clear they still aren't doing stuff right. So does that make them good kings? That they're all successful with this stuff and that they have a beautiful, fantastic land? Nope. See, while they did many things that were super favorable to God, there was just such a level of narcissism that as a nation, they could look around and see all of the towers and pillars and wealth that they've accumulated. And go, hey, look at this stuff. Look at what we've done. We're super great. Give us like a pat on the back, a thumbs up. So what if we're not doing exactly what God wants? We're doing something right. They were not a humble nation. There was arrogance and confidence, and eventually, in Uzziah's case, a situation where he became so full of himself that he thought he could make the rules and go in and do like the temple sacrifice, and then he got struck with leprosy and eventually died. So there was this confidence that was definitely emanating from the kings at this time that was not healthy in the slightest. Anyway, back to Isaiah. Here he is getting this angry vision from God to share, which is filled with sorrow and a whirlwind of disappointment towards Israel. And it's just a brutal message, but it does something to him. So at the very beginning of this, it says, like, Isaiah essentially got this message. If we can go back to the very first one. I don't have it word for word on my thing. This is a vision that Isaiah, son of Amoz, son concerning Judah and Jerusalem. So this is something that he is perceiving that he is going to share to the nation. And I like to think of Isaiah as a regular dude in just kind of a pretty tough situation. He's tasked with ministering to a bunch of very proud and, like, haughty snotbags. And trying here. And it's pretty clear they aren't going to listen. After all, what's his message about? Be afraid of God and know that you'll suffer. Like, that's not something that people that are really thinking they're doing super great are going to want to hear or listen to in the slightest. But somehow, this vision that Isaiah got was clearly super intense, and it shared like the ridiculous glory that God would have over the kingdom and his rule, and just the fantastic like beating swords into plowshares and stuff like that, and like forgetting what war is, like this incredible stuff. And then, right, you're not there yet. We're gonna enter in this ridiculous realm of devastating just death and misery, where you're gonna run fleeing into caves and cast aside everything that you have that you're so proud of right now, because you're ignorant of God, and it might not be taken seriously by Israel, but this message was taken seriously by Isaiah. God made it a visceral experience. This vision is ridiculous. It became deeply personal to him. He knows his message is going out to very, very, very hard-headed people, and like they're clearly not going to pay attention to this, but he's still going to do it. So, about 2 years ago, I was on like a break for my Parks and Recreation thing that I was doing at the time, and it was right before we were gonna do our evening meeting with the kids, and I love Wendy's, so I went to Wendy's to grab a bite of lunch first. And inside Wendy's, there were two Jehovah's Witnesses just hanging out, full garb, full dress and everything, trying to talk to every single one of the staff at Wendy's. And it's a Wendy's. Like, these people are just like, do you want a burger, man? I'm just trying to do my job. Like, come on. And they were like really adamant. It's like, we want to talk to people in the back. We want to share this message with everybody. And I'm like, I'll just take my order and I'll go sit at this table over here. They didn't bother me. They were just there to all of the staff. It was super confusing. And I kind of look back at that when I was thinking of this, and it's like, in a way, Isaiah's kind of like those Jehovah's Witnesses at a Wendy's. But I actually think he's a little bit less weird. he has a message that he's out there to share to a very unusual group of people to share that message with, that clearly are focused on something else, doing something else entirely. But this message is impossible and terrifying, but he still preaches it. That's commitment. But in the end, the content is clear. God is eternal, and their stuff isn't. The stuff that Israel, Jerusalem, all of that has, all those things that they've built up and are so proud of, none of that's going to matter. All of your personal successes, all of your shrines, all gone once God strolls into town. That's what's mentioned when he goes into the cave, or at least people went into the cave. It's like 4 pages ahead. I should know this because I created the PowerPoint today. Yeah, crawling into the caves and the rocks, hiding in the dust, human pride will be brought down, human arrogance will be humbled. So they're going to be terrified. All these things they accomplished aren't going to matter. And what's going to be standing at the end? Nothing but God. This is even confirmed through the vision Isaiah has at the very start of the chapter. If we actually go back there, I'm sorry I'm making you go back and forth so much. I should have a little clicky thing or a laser pointer. Let's take a look at what the glorious nation God promised Jerusalem was going to have. Well, it's the mountain of the Lord's house. Let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of Jacob's God. There he will teach us his ways and we will walk in his paths. Is God talking about these beautiful halls or these ornamental decorations that people are so proud of? No. The only thing that matters in this vision is that God is there. That's the only thing that's of any interest, and people are clamoring to it. They're excited about it. They're saying, hey, Jeff, let's go check out this place. This is mighty interesting. God's there. I don't know if that's their name in biblical times. I like to think that it is. But you have all these people that are clamoring to this, that are excited about the one thing that's there. It's not these incredible cloths and mercantile earnings and stuff like that and all of these accomplishments. It's just going to visit God. That's all that stands in the end. That's all that matters in the end. He's the real deal. He's beyond wealth and beyond accomplishments, beyond anything human. And that's the message Isaiah has to share. All that pride and confidence you have, that means nothing. It's nothing without God. When he strolls in, you're going to be terrified. You're going to forget all of that stuff that's normally in your mind, and there's only going to be one focus and one singular thing, and that's God. And that's the message that Isaiah has to share. He gave you what you have, and he's very, very able to take it away. What stands in the end besides God? What matters in the end besides the work that we do for him? This is something that Isaiah clearly saw through his vision. It's something that he witnessed for the first time and was like, whoa, this is a crazy message. This is something that I have to share with literally everybody. Like, he, as we're going to explore further into this, he's going to be sharing this for a long time. And he's going to have to do some serious stuff. And this vision is the passion that made him really willing to do it. Before that, I tend to think of him as someone who's like, I don't know, I'm just a regular Joe. I'm a regular Isaiah, off to do my thing. And then God hits him, bam, with this vision. He sees the perfect result in the end, and he's like, that's what I'm here to attain. That's what I'm going for. I want to have Israel be the nation of God as it's supposed to be. I want to see this come to fruition. It's so visceral and it's so real, and then the devastation that's going to come before that is so tragic. I have to fight for it. That's what a nation looks like with and without God at its head. It's two sides of a coin, one of which is really, really good and one of which is really, really bad. And that's honestly what made him willing enough to fight in such an impossible scenario. And something that I want to get a vision like that sometime myself. I want to know the kingdom that I'm fighting for. I want to know, like, I feel like I do see that other side of the coin. I see that destruction in our world. I see all of that failure and ruin out there, and it's tragic and it makes my heart hurt. And that's the same thing that Isaiah saw. That's the kind of thing that he looked at and he's like, this is devastating. This is worse than I thought. It's going to end worse than I realized. And this is what it can be. Isaiah saw all of this and saw the pride of Jerusalem, the almost worship that these people were giving themselves. And it was like tragic. It's devastating. It's sad. Because you can go around and worship yourself all day long and say, look at what I built, look at what I accomplished. And what does that mean in the end to God? What are your own little things that you're doing going to do? I'd like to think that God would be super impressed with my like Lego spaceships that I built. I don't think that's what matters to him. That's so sad to say. Wow.
I care about your Lego structure.
Do you, Brooks?
Yeah, I think they look good.
But in the end, those things aren't what matters to God. Those personal accomplishments, those personal creations, all of that stuff, meaningless. What really matters to God and what's shown to matter to God is people doing stuff for him, worshiping him, giving the glory to him. The nation of Israel didn't get to what it became because they did it all by themselves. We have a bunch of books that cover that, and some of them are real boring at times. But we have that message. We have that very clear definition that in the end, all of our pride, we're going to be humbled in front of God. And we're not going to care that we're humbled. We're going to be scared and we're going to be excited. and we better be ready to show what we have done in his name for him, because in the end, that's what matters. That is what I got for today. So thank you so much.
Amen.